All right, welcome. Welcome to the Educated Guest Podcast. Yo, what we got playing right there, Doji?
This is September 13th. Classic Pete Rock and Seal Smooth sample.
We are back together on this one, okay? We are the EPMD of Educational Podcast. I'm Eric Sermon, the Green-Eyed Bandit, and that over there is PMD, a.k.a. Mr. Underscore A-Y-Y-Y. Why don't you run the disclaimer today, my man?
Yeah, any of the thoughts, expressions, feelings expressed in this episode of the Educate Guest Podcast is not representative of the people we work for, the agencies we work for, or any of that. They are ours and ours alone. Retweets don't necessarily mean endorsements, and likes just mean I like.
Right. The whole retweets and endorsements thing. Really important people put that in their bio. I don't think I have that in mine yet because not enough people pay attention to me to think that my retweets mean anything. I just want people to pay attention to certain things. You know what I'm saying?
I'm in the same boat.
All right. So I've been out. I've been actually getting a lot of recording done because I've been off of work. Okay. I've been off of work for health reasons. It's nothing too important. My students have been asking my wife because my wife works at the same site that I do. And my students are like, when's Mr. Fernandez going to come back? Is he really sick? And what I have does keep me out for a couple, 2 to 3 weeks a year. Sometimes it's when I don't have good diet and good exercise. But I've been out. I've been out and I've just been resting and getting well. And I've done a little bit more recording than usual. Normally, I only put out like once a month because I have a hard time with my work schedule and my family schedule, meeting up with people that I really want to interview. So I'm trying to get more out. You saw I got the solo shot 2 out. Okay, I don't know. You got a chance to listen to that one yet?
I did. That was good. Good stuff, man. I retweeted it, sent it out. It was good stuff. International Women's Day.
Uh-huh.
Shout out to your moms.
Yeah, thank you for actually listening. And then I got one in today that will come out in a couple of weeks. It'll come out after this one. So I've been getting some recording done, man. Took a couple of days off to get some fishing in. I know that sounds hella boring. Everybody go to sleep now. You can go to sleep. All right, Rodrigo, where you been, man? Talk to us.
Oh, man. I was out and about doing my thing. You know, the perks of the gig that I have, I'm able to do a little bit of traveling up and down the state with after-school programs and whatnot. Very, very fortunate enough to go to South by Southwest EDU last week, and that was freaking unbelievable, bro. I highly recommend if people have the opportunity to go. Just an amazing opportunity to touch base with people from all over the nation, cutting edge stuff, and just be in the same kind of atmosphere as people who want to innovate, people who want to be disruptors in the educational sector, and just build, man. So it was all love. It was cool.
Okay. And I mentioned that in the last podcast, South by Southwest EDU. I mentioned it as a Edupalooza, a festival of sorts, the Coachella of education.
I don't know if it's all that, though.
Well, what's funny, though, is that when I watched the Chris Emden speech, the man who came on before was the actual guy who put it together. His name was Ron Reed, and he referred to it as a festival.
as a festival.
All right. So I imagine you know, like you're at Burning Man, you got your lanyard, you're shirtless, you're sweating.
My loincloth, and that's it. And it's just all of a sudden the sun's beating down on
me. All the primal energy is focused on education. Paint a picture for us, because there's a lot of us out here who have never, ever been. Is this your first time?
No, this is my first year, man. My first year, and I'm definitely going to go back next year. I'm more familiar with Boost, the Boost Collaborative. They do an amazing, amazing conference in Palm Springs every year, where it's the largest of its kind for after-school practitioners, out-of-school-time practitioners. And they do a really good job of creating an amazing atmosphere. People just enjoy being there, right? Mm-hmm. But I want to say that South by Southwest was a little bit bigger in scale for sure, but the same kind of energy and enthusiasm, but noticeable with the K-12, with the core school day. So a lot of people from EdTech, a lot of people from just teachers, administrators, superintendents, and whatnot. And so that was higher ed. No, that was really, really cool to kind of sit and mingle and talk to different people about different issues that are all pretty much similar. You know, I think we're at an inflection point in our education. So it was nice to kind of have everybody have this similar discussions, but very different ways of solving different problems. You know what I mean? So it's kind of cool.
Okay. So I imagine like a Comic-Con, they'd had like a floor where people were trying to sell you things.
An expo hall.
This is our latest toy, right? So you walk the expo hall, what kind of stuff you see?
So, I mean, there's all kinds of different things. They broke it up into different categories. You had like STEM stuff, how to do, how to get, you know, improve learning with STEM, how to do a lot of VR stuff, a lot of drones, and then just people pitching stuff. I think what's unique about that expo hall, though, was, first of all, there are about 6,000 attendees, right? So there's a lot of people from all over the nation. But the cool thing is, like, the first day, the expo hall is only open for registrants, right? So not too many people, but there is, you know, enough throughout the day, right? But the cool thing is, the second day of the conference, they open it up to a bunch of students. And they open it up to a bunch of students, a bunch of teachers, a bunch of community members who just walk through the expo hall. Mm-hmm. And that is freaking awesome, because now you get to see the work that these people are actually doing, but working with kids. So someone's practicing there on their VR headset. You know, people practicing simulations on drones. You know, it was just dope. It was really, really cool seeing, like, the kids interact with the products. Because now it's like real life. It's not like, oh, this is some, theoretically, this is how it worked. Now, you can get the real sense from how kids are like, oh, yeah, man, this is awesome. This will work.
Okay.
This won't. You know, the homie, what's his name? Terry Gonzalez was there with School of Beats.
I saw that.
And he had some people freestyling in his booth. It was dope. It was really, really dope. We had some high school students get up in there and just rip the mic up.
What's the name of that kid you retweeted? Oh. He was getting it.
Eloy.
Okay.
Eloy, something. We'll put his name in the notes. But yeah, he was killing it.
And you also you retweeted it, so you guys can find him on the Twitters. Are you private? Do people have to request you?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't do mine like that either. No. I figure I want more people to see my info. Good. So it's on Rodrigo's Twitter, Mr_AYYY. So you can check out the freestyle in there. Tell us more. I'm so eager. So they got the floor, and then I assume like they either have workshops or panels or what?
Well, it's the convention center. So they got a bunch of stuff in the convention center, right? They got two floors of exhibitor halls, right? So it's one floor of like the main floor for the first 2 days, and then the second floor was for people who were going to stay the entire conference. It was a smaller exhibit hall for those people, but definitely cool stuff. Mm-hmm. But again, this is spread out amongst like three different hotels. So they had the Hilton, which is right adjacent to the convention center. They had the JW Marriott, and then they had another venue. And then between those three hotels and the convention center, you had to figure out what sessions you'd go to.
So what'd you go to?
So I went to a couple. The whole purpose of me going was to explore the connections between entrepreneurialism or entrepreneurship and our extended learning or expanded learning programs, right?
Okay.
So I was looking to see how we can do that in our district. And so we linked up with this group from Real World Scholars. Shout out to Lise Burden out in San Diego. And she's doing some amazing things. What they're basically doing is putting banks into classrooms. And they're providing seed money for schools or students in classrooms who want to make their own business. It's awesome, dude. So you had a group of first graders from I want to say Georgia, with their teacher. They decided to create a business. They got seed money from Real World Scholars, and then they created, I forgot what they created, just little trinkets or things like that, right?
Okay.
Sold those.
A widget,
exactly. Actually, the homie Dan Ryder on Twitter, they made little Wicked widgets or Wicked things, like Wicked Focus is the name of the product. And okay. basically, they that high school, he's a English teacher out in Maine. And what they did was they went through the whole design thinking process to find out what students who were having maybe some anxiety or had IEPs, what they would need to help reduce that. And so I'm sure you've seen those little widgets, those little things where like...
it's like a fidget toy.
A fidget toy, exactly. So what they did with their class was they 3D printed a bunch of them.
Okay.
And so then they sold those. And Real World Scholars was basically like their seed money to get all the stuff for them to do that. Mm. And so now they have the website and they kick it all out. And it's, I'm telling you, dude, it's dope. It is dope. Like so what we're going to do, we partnered with them. The plan is to get a couple 8 sites in our district to work in our after-school programs to put some social entrepreneurship products out, a lot like Tom's, where it's buy one, give one, and let's try to make a change. It's one of those things that we were looking at with that book, The Upcoming Job Wars, and the Clifton family was talking about how in the future, it's not necessarily going to be about the amount of currency that you create, which is going to determine the wealth. It's going to be about how many jobs you create. So if we teach our young people how to be entrepreneurs, how to create jobs, how to give back to their communities, mm-hmm. I think we're going to be off in a better place. So okay. trying to be ahead of the curve a little bit in our district by expanding it in that untapped resource that we call expanded learning.
All right.
So that was one. The social entrepreneurship with Real World Scholars and Ed Corbs. And then another standout workshop was done by the D School and the Human Equity Project. And it was called, I forget the name, but it was about liberatory design. So it's the combination of design thinking and how to increase equity or equitable issues in schools, right? And so freaking that blew my mind, bro.
Okay, before we get that, we need some context for the listeners that don't know what design thinking is.
So design,
I'm not 100% on it, so you got to give it to me.
Right. So design thinking is a human-centered approach to designing products, policies, projects, anything.
How do you begin?
So the first thing you do typically is to develop empathy for the end user. So whoever you're going to work with, right? So mm-hmm. typically if it was a teacher, I would start to develop empathy for my students. So it's a lot about listening, looking for key stories.
Okay.
Right? Once you've developed that empathy and understand what the actual need is, mm-hmm. they're not going to tell you, you're going to see it, right? Mm. And so once you've developed that understanding of what the actual need is, you can start to define what the problem is.
Okay.
Right? So that's the second stage of design thinking is develop empathy, then you have defining the problem. After that, then you break into a session of ideation. You ideate a bunch of different solutions. And the whole idea with ideation is that you just go for volume. There's no dumb answers, right?
You'll get to that later.
Yeah, anything's possible. So you just moonshot, right?
Okay.
And then after you ideate, then you start to weed out which ones are more realistic or which ones are actionable. Because throughout this process, you're having a bias towards action. Right, you want to make sure that you're not.
You want to do something. Do something.
Right, you're not trying to sit there and have paralysis by analysis. Like, yeah,
correct. You got it.
So.
What?
After you have that ideation mode, then you break out into a prototype, and the whole idea with a prototype is dope, man, because you start to build a physical representation of the idea of the solution that you've created, and the physical representation is super super important, man, because it'll help you figure out what the details are of your product or the solution.
I got you.
Right? So if it's coming up with whatever, a new toy or whatever, it's understanding like, oh, this is what happens here and this is how we use this and creating all the features that are inside that product, mm-hmm. they're right there, right? So you can explain it to people. And then the last piece is that you test. You put it in the world, into the real world and you see how it interacts. Now, what's cool about this piece, so I was very familiar with that. I've done it with a couple of teachers before, and I've done it with students, and you know that the whole design thinking piece was pretty familiar with me, mm-hmm. for me. But the novel piece was the addition of two new steps. Mm-hmm. And the first step was notice. So before you gained empathy, you had to notice and you had to pause for an equity pause. That's what they called it. So you notice what your biases are before you even start to gain empathy. So you walking in into a session about learning about someone, you have to be cognizant of what you bring and the baggage that you bring, okay, and how that might distort the information that you're going to get.
Okay.
And how that distortion might be caused because of whatever things that you have, right? So for instance, if I'm Latino male, if I'm watching, you know, trying to gain empathy on, you know, older white women, right? They might perceive me a certain way and I might perceive them a certain way. The whole idea is that I'm totally aware of how my biases play into this
this
ethnography.
Yeah.
And I'm just knowing, right? Being cognizant is huge. So that was, for me, was like the worth the entire conference, bro. That was the clouds parting and the sun shining on my face and just
really?
Dang, that is huge. Because some of the stories that we heard from the people that were next to us, man, they were like, you know, we had a middle-aged white woman just going, I work in a diverse area and I just don't know how to deal with my whiteness. How do I support my students and my families? And I was just like, dang, it was blown away, dude. She was just like, I understand I have biases. I understand that. And I just don't want to. And it was just an awkward situation, right? And it was tough. It was a heavy.
Do you remember where she was from?
I do.
Uh-huh.
But again, it was like, yeah, she was from the Bay Area.
Okay.
But even there.
Okay.
I mean, just like, it was intense, man, that just those conversations. So, and it was, what made it great, though, was the content was perfect. I mean, there was really heavy duty content, but yeah. I got to give props to the D school team, the Stanford Design School, David H. Clifford, who was leading the team from the D school. Just, I mean, I had to stop in the middle of the training and just go up to him and say, dude, you guys are just amazing. And the way the facilitation, like, we have a saying in after school, bro, like, game recognize game. And they were very intentional on how they spoke. Mm-hmm. They were very intentional on the questions they asked to elicit people's conversation.
Okay.
It was masterful, bro. And so just having them guide us through those conversations, and because they're difficult conversations, but they did just an amazing job, dude. So. Those two workshops are the ones that stood out in my mind.
Uh-huh.
But and I'm excited to bring both those two things to my district.
Okay, so for those of you that don't know, you might be a new listener to the Educated Guest podcast. We both work in the same district. I'm a math teacher, and Rodrigo is what we call a TOSA, a teacher on special assignment. And you work specifically with after-school programs.
Correct, correct. Okay. Middle school and high school after-school programs.
Okay, okay. And we had this discussion already in episode one, if you want to go back and listen to that. Not every school has an after-school program, but those that do, Rodrigo works with them. So you got the district to pony up some money to send you out to this conference, and yeah, it was a good thing, and you're bringing back some stuff.
Yeah, man. I mean, we got the first conference, we got eight schools that are going to be committed to this entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So that's potentially $8,000 for each of those schools. Not for each of those schools. $1,000 for each of those eight schools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then this design thinking partnership. I strongly believe this is going to be the piece that really transforms us in education, this next step. I mean, this is huge. And I think one of the reasons why it's going to be so beneficial, again, it's what we don't do enough in education is we don't listen to our damn students.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And so this framework is designed around listening to our students and listening to our families and listening to our parents and listening to our teachers.
So if any of our listeners out there wanted to look up more information on this, what would they Google?
Google D-School design thinking, mm-hmm, and there's a whole crash course that you can go check out. I mean, okay, it's a 90-minute crash course where you go through the whole process of design thinking. And they actually have a really good hacktivity, which is reimagining the gift giving process. And so, again, everybody knows how to give a gift. Everybody's been given a gift, right? And it's, you go through the 90 minute process of like reimagining that. Okay. So you go through empathy, you go through define, you go, all those little things, all
right.
And you build a prototype. And again, they coach you through that whole framework. And yeah. it's amazing, dude.
You got something funky there to play for me? I need a little bit of break before we talk about something that was really important at that conference.
Ooh.
You got anything funky over there?
Mm-hmm. You know I do.
Word. Okay, so we're going to take us a little break, just a little breather.
Yeah. If you guys didn't catch the beginning part, we'll go back to the beginning. It's because you didn't catch it.
Well, I was taking a drink of this mineral water.
Another Trap Hope West sample,
because... we're going to go there in a minute. So I'm going to ask you this. What was your introduction to hip-hop?
Oh, dude. I would say my second oldest brother, Diego Arancibia, riding around in the old Cutlass, Oldsmobile, 94, bumping Tribe and Wu-Tang, summer 94.
I was going to say, had to be around 94. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of Wu-Tang, true story.
Oh. This happened.
True story. This happened to me. This happened to me. Those of you that are hip-hop heads, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Those of you who do not, sorry. So, popular group, Wu-Tang Clan, right? Method Man, GZA, RZA, Raekwon the Chef.
Old
Dirty Bastard. And who am I forgetting? Ghostface Killah. Ghostface is in town on Friday night doing a concert at the House of Blues. And I have a friend that I've had since I was a teenager. He's into promoting. He was a very skilled hip-hop dancer back in the days. We'll call him Flash. Flash calls me out of the blue, and he calls me through Facebook Messenger because I don't think he actually has my phone number, right? So I answer it because it's coming through Facebook Messenger, and nobody contacts me that way. Yo, what's up, Flash? What's going on? And he's like, hey, Caesar, I'm over here at the concert. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm at home taking care of my family, bro. He's all, oh, he's like let down by my response.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Oh, come on. Stop being a father. And then he says, well, hey, Ghostface wants to buy one of those fire sticks that gets all of the fancy movies and TV shows and stuff that you have or that you do that I might or might not
allegedly program
for friends, no monetary value here. So yeah, you won't. I'm like, wait a minute. Are you telling me that Ghostface, okay? Are you telling me the Ghostface Killer wants to buy one of my fire sticks? Yeah, bro. Can you do that? Can you come down here and sell him one? I was blown away, bro. I was blown away. But the truth of the matter is that the fire sticks are all out of stock everywhere you go. They only sell them at Amazon, Staples, and Best Buy. And they're all out of stock because they're coming out with a new version of it in April.
Right on. Right on.
So I'm like, sorry, bro, I don't have any.
And you know, it's a, so you did immediately after you didn't have any. Who'd you call?
I called you. I called you, but not to ask you for yours. I just called you to tell you the story because I know that you can appreciate the story. And I called my brother-in-law too. And my brother-in-law was like, why didn't you give him yours?
That's exactly what I said. I said, why don't you give him yours, dude?
I'm like, nah, bro. Like, I'm a fan, but come on, man.
We ain't that type.
I'm a grown-ass man, bro. I'm not going to give you my device. You know what I'm saying?
Well, again, I was all on board, dude. I was like, hey, you can just give him mine, man. Just give him mine. And then... you know, of course, I was like, yeah, but I got to get a picture with him, dude, and got to do something with the kids. Mm-hmm. And then I get the stank eye from the wife. She just gave me this dirty look like, motherfucker. You know, we use that, right? You know, the kids use that. You know, those. I was like, oh, man. Never mind. Abort mission.
Right. All right. So we're going to get back into this discussion there. You were at South by Southwest. you were tweeting stuff, and I was following along with you. And one of the people that I picked up was a associate professor out at
Columbia University.
Columbia University. He's in the teaching program department over there. I don't know.
Teaching and learning.
There you go. There you go. And he goes by the name of
Dr. Chris Emden.
Dr. Chris Emden. Look the man up. Look up the YouTube and look up the speech that I'm talking about. It's about an hour long. There's another guy who introduces him who speaks for about 10 minutes, so you can skip that and get straight to Dr. Chris. That's my first time seeing him, and he made a powerful impression upon me.
Why is that?
Well, he is speaking pretty much the same thing that Dr. Jeffrey Duncan Andrade mm-hmm. was speaking to our district earlier this year. And, it was just amazing stuff about how people that teach in the hood don't really understand the kids in the hood. They don't know how to be empathetic to the stress and the trauma that these kids have in their lives. Yep. And for me, the way I would describe it in my own words is that you ain't getting Bloom's taxonomy if you don't have Maslow's hierarchy, okay? Are not getting met, okay? If people ain't understanding and giving you your basic needs, then you are probably not going to excel as a student.
Right.
The title of his speech is?
We got it from here. Thank you for your service.
Borrowed from the latest album by A Tribe Called Quest, Rest in Peace, Five Dog. I was just blown away by the man's speech.
I'm telling you, man, the thing was cool. And we're so, so, so fortunate enough to have him at Boost a few years ago. And I told him afterwards, man, I said, like, the force is strong with you, bruh. Because he's just gotten exponentially better in speaking. His ability to synthesize, he's always had the ability to synthesize the information, especially translating from hip hop to, the academia, which I think is, you know, the fact that we have to do it is kind of a bullshit anyway, but, just being able to synthesize those ideas just on a whim, mm-hmm. the boy's bad, man. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so, I think there were a lot of nervous people in that audience.
Uncomfortable.
Because he called it like he see it, man. And that's
what he said. We got some friends in the room.
Yep.
We got some enemies in the room.
Yep.
And we got
some frenemies who need to get convinced. You know what I'm saying? And dude, I mean, I don't know how many times we like stood up. He broke out into his Pentecostal pedagogy. For a little bit, and it was good, man. It was, you know, I spoke speaking to people afterwards that weren't familiar with him, and they were just like, "Oh my God, this is like, this transformed how I look at how we do education, mm-hmm. right?" And these are the people who I was hanging out with were pretty, I would consider them pretty influential in the state of education. You know what I'm saying? And especially in San Diego, especially. Mm-hmm. In this disruptor innovators type of way. So to hear that, I was fired up to see how far we can go with it.
I imagine a room full of, I don't know, a couple of thousand people, maybe 1,000 people coming from all parts of the country. Some of them very well educated, very well experienced in education. Others, as he mentioned, merely had a product to sell. But your boy came strong on all of them.
Yeah.
He came hard to the point where he might have shut a few people off, but deservedly so.
They shouldn't have been in the room in the first place. You know what I mean? Those people who were offended or who had some sort of bias towards him, that they got work to do on themselves. You know what I'm saying? Because it was everything that he hit on was completely relevant, completely important to what education is this here and now. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't. He wasn't sugarcoating shit, which is what you'd want. You know what I'm saying? Because we mm-hmm. we've gone through a lot of people just kind of, oh yeah, yeah, you know, this that. Just nah, bro. Call it for what it is.
No, I like I said, a lot of the same elements from Dr. Jeffrey Duncan Andrade It's unapologetic, bro. Unapologetic.
And I, that's what I appreciate, man.
And he, I think he even took it a step further, and he was like, you know, you white folks in the hood don't understand these kids in the hood. Mm-hmm.
But it, you know,
but he wants to help them.
Yeah, but see, again, and it wasn't exclusive to white folks. You know what I'm saying? And because that's what at the bottom of the book it says, and the rest of y'all too.
And the rest of y'all too. You correct. Know what I'm
saying? And the rest
correct.
Of y'all, the rest of y'all too, is because we got some people out here who are.
The title of the book is what I kind of what I said. What's the title of the book
for people for folks who for white folks who teach in the hood and the rest of y'all too.
And the rest of y'all too.
And the rest of y'all too.
Okay,
and
you so, have the book or is
I
do, it is it available?
I don't have it here, but I have it. It's in my office.
Have you read it or?
Yep.
How long has it been out?
I want to say that he released it earlier this year.
Okay.
Earlier this year. I want to say December, November, maybe earlier than that.
So late last year.
I can't put a finger out. Let me pull it up.
So either way it goes, Dr. Chris Emden, we're coming for you. Boost Conference 2017, April. We gonna try to get him on the podcast or what?
That's what I hope, man. But I'm not gonna try to pressure the bruh. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be that dude.
You know what, man? You only live once, bro. Can you just step out for the podcast? March
26th.
Can you just put a foot forward for the podcast and be like, bro?
I can do it. I'll do the best I can. I'll do the best I can.
Whatever cause that man donates to, tell him I'll donate to the cause.
I love it.
If he can give me a half hour of his time.
You know, he did the, what do you call it? He did the, he's big on the Science Genius, right? And so he worked with the Jizza from the Wu-Tang to do freestyle. Well, because again, he's the godfather of hip-hop Ed, right? And so he hosts a chat every Tuesday night on Twitter.
Who does?
Chris Emden.
Nah.
Yeah, man.
Tomorrow night he'll be hosting the chat.
Yep.
I started following him because you retweeted him because I saw the speech. I wholeheartedly appreciate you for bringing that man into my life.
Oh man.
Cheer.
What was cool, man, again, like again, the little historical context. We met him at Boost a few years back and the book had not come out yet. Right, and he was in the process of writing it. And to me, at that time, it was cool because I was, you know, what I'm saying, like, it's like seeing your brother up there on the stage speaking truth, and you're just like, dude, that's freaking awesome, dude. And then, you know, I'm still kind of teetering on whether or not I should do the doctorate program and stuff like that. So I asked him the real question. I was like, so what's up, man? How was the doc program, and was it? How has it been after posted before and after, right? It's like night and day, bro. Night and day. People actually take you seriously when you start talking about this stuff because you got the doctorate. And I was like, dang. Oh, well, I got to be all like that.
It's true, though.
It is.
It's true.
And so, and unfortunately, it's true. And so, you know, he was in the process of cranking, doing the work of writing the book,
okay.
Right? And that was like setting aside time, cranking it out. So it's cool that it actually came out, and it's like, it's the work, bro. It's the work. Good stuff.
Good stuff. All right, cool. So again, I retweeted the speech. You know what? I've never mentioned it on here, and it's kind of counterproductive. I have a public Facebook page for the podcast, and I post all the episodes there. I post all the links to where you can get it on iTunes, Stitchers, TuneIn, whatever. And anything that I mention is also posted there. So like I mentioned a couple of episodes ago about my father-in-law doing this, you know, had a special on PBS. I posted the full episode on the Facebook page. Just look it up, the Educated Guest Podcast. And I'm going to post the speech there also. So that's why I bring that up. Dope. You got another funky interlude ready for us to go, or I see you over there working your magic. What you got for us now before we lead into the next discussion here? So, Educated Guest Podcast. I'm the Green Eyed Bandit. That's PMD.
Let's see if you can identify this wonderful sample.
Okay. Probably not.
Ooh, I see you working. I see the brains going.
If it happened already, I missed it.
No.
Okay.
He's in your top five.
Solo artist. He's in your top five.
Solo artist.
Uh-huh. All right.
It's coming.
It's coming. Anytime soon.
Oh.
All right.
I'm out for presidents to represent me.
Say what? Is that, that's his sample right here, huh? Oh, it's some Jay-Z.
There you go.
I said Jay-Z was in my top five?
Yeah.
When? It was not. It was in New York.
Check the tape.
No. I didn't give you that. I would not do that. All right. So while we got this sample rolling, I'm going to answer the same question that I asked Doji. So it's about 1987, and I'm riding the bus to Bell Junior High. I lived in East San Diego, nice people called City Heights. I was bussed in for the magnet program there, the seminar and cluster program. So anyways, I'm riding the bus. Young man gets on with a boombox. People actually had boomboxes. There were no rules like, hey, you can't bring that on the bus.
It's a now. There's a noise.
Noise, noisy. Too much noisy. And the kid presses play. And I bullshit you not, it is Eazy-E. It is Boys in the Hood. Can you imagine how transforming and powerful that was? I mean, just it was a whole different type of music. And the fact that it was just...
What am I listening to right
exactly,
now?
Exactly, bro. What is this that is agitating my ears? This,
but I like it.
But I like it. Yeah, and from then on, so see, I got a late start. I wish I could tell you that I've been following hip hop since day one, Sugar Hill Gang, all that, woop woop wop wop, Fabulous, Funky Four Plus One More, all that. I can't tell you that. I had to go back. Mm-hmm. I had to go back and experience that. Okay, Boys in the Hood, Eazy-E, my man. All right, so we're gonna get back into this. You took my advice. Other people took my advice. You took the wife to go see Get Out.
Oh.
You took the wife to go see
we're doing the Jordan Peele
Get Out.
My man, that was... So, again, I purposely want... First of all, I don't like... I'm not a scary movie guy. I don't do that shit.
I'm with you, bro.
I don't do that
shit. It tests my manliness. I jump.
You know, I've been known to be skittish around suspense scenes. You know what I'm saying? I don't like that shit. And so... But I'm like, okay, I hear it's a good movie, and then you're like, it's not Freddy Krueger, motherfucker. It's just, you know, it's just good, scary, suspenseful. Yeah, yeah. All right, cool.
So all we right, get so there. Your impressions.
So I go there on Saturday, and I'm like, I'm just kind of anxious. I'm like, dude, this is gonna be good. I'm like, I know it's gonna be good. Feel it in my heart and bones, and bruh, it lived up to the expectation, bro. There was so much to talk about. There's so many levels of just like. Nuance, and like just it was amazing, bro. It was just I sincerely think people gonna look back at this film and just it's a masterpiece, dude. It's a masterpiece. People gonna write papers about it. It's just good stuff.
I've been looking for a fresh new conversation or approach to racism. I get upset when I go down the social media wormhole of people that just either deny racism exists or they think that it's going to go away if we just all see ourselves as Americans, okay? So I've been looking for something fresh, something provocative, and this was much, much more.
this is a whole new ballgame.
This was like a hammer straight to the forehead, knock you out. Like, what just happened? You know what I'm saying?
And again, like the nuance is so, it was so well done because it's really easy to get like sucked into just, oh, I know what's going to happen here. I know what's going to happen here. I know what's going to happen here. And that's obviously not going to happen. But again, like having race relations be interwoven into the story just makes it more, that much more like, you're emotionally invested in the film. Because I don't know about you, but I, for one, totally can feel the homies going through some of that problem right there.
Ooh.
And it was tough, dude. I mean, it was like, did you hear what he said? Did you hear what they said? See how they said that? See how?
Right.
It was a trip, bro. Like, the subtleties of my, quote, my father's not racist. He would have voted for Obama if he had a third term.
Yeah.
Okay. And like, right. You know, it's so fun. Like the interplay between The two characters was just, it was phenomenal, man. It was beautiful.
Which ones? The guy and his friend?
Yeah, the guy and the girlfriend.
Okay.
So just, I mean, because you hear that narrative all the time. You know, no, my parents are totally different. No, it's not gonna happen. Uh-huh. All right.
So in the opening scene, this young black man walking.
Oh wait, hold on. We're gonna go spoiler alert. Should we let him know? Spoiler
no, alert? You're okay, right. All right, alert. We're gonna stop. We're gonna not do that. We're gonna not but do that again, when it gets out of theaters. Then maybe we'll do that if we even talk about it again.
But see, here's the thing. I think we can talk about certain things. Like there's this. What pieces do you want to just like tackle? Because I kind of want to tackle like the subtle nuances that they had about people being
the racist comments,
just racist comments, and just kind of like thinking it's not what it is. Like
when they were all at the party, like yeah, that welcoming yeah, party yeah, together, yeah, yeah, yeah. White girl brings her black boyfriend around. There's only like a couple of black people there.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden they're put on stage.
They're servants. You don't really know, you know what capacity these servants operate in, but they are also amongst the only black people there.
Correct. Correct.
Okay, so those nuances got you.
But no, just like even the so the auctioning. There was an auction scene. I don't know if you caught that.
At first, I thought they were just freaking playing bingo, but then no, I realized
they're auctioning. And then there was an auction after the auction or before the auction. It was like a test question of, you know, what is it like being African American?
Mm.
And then that was like him being on the auction block, bro. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and how mm-hmm. are you going to respond? How is this person going to like, dude? It was heavy duty, bro. I mean, just despite the whole sunken place. Hypnotism.
Oh, see, stuff. Now you're going there. Yeah, no, now you're going there because the sunken place was really deep with me, and I didn't understand it until Jordan Peele actually tweeted about it, and I was like, yo,
yeah, dude,
what? right. So yeah, that was deep. That was deep. So we can't really say it without the spoilers, but in order to kind of incapacitate the black people in the movie, they would be hypnotized and they would go to their own kind of sunken place.
Right.
So they would still kind of exist, but they'd be so far removed from the actual body that they weren't really there.
Right, they were a shell of themselves. And I think what's fascinating there too is that, you know, there's the psychotherapist wife and the neurologist husband,
mm-hmm.
everything's cool, whatever. But the fact that they had to, the phase one was breaking them down.
White people breaking down black people.
And then just mentally breaking them down and just using instances in which
they were powerless.
They had no power. Mm-hmm. They had no sense of agency. Now that becomes your crutch. You will forever go back to that, and that's how you won't.
That becomes like your linchpin. Like that's how I got you.
Yeah, you're going to be incapacitated because of this. Mm-hmm. And then that phase is preparation. They call it pre-operation.
Pre-op, bro. Pre-op.
I'm telling you, bro. There was so much there. I mean, besides the girlfriend eating her Fruit Loops separate from her milk. Right, like just okay. That's not very subtle, but there's, you know.
And I appreciate that because his friend, the security guard, was not very subtle either.
But see, that's the comedic genius that was there, right? He goes, mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. they did this, and they kind of went over the top, but mm-hmm. it was over the top enough to where you're like, well, it could be, but not that much. You know what I'm saying? So it was really, really well done.
All right. Kind of staying within the topic, but getting back. Kind of, we're going to round our way back to education a little bit here. So I don't know if you've been seeing this congressman in Iowa. His name is Steve King, and the comments that he made, and it's basically kind of like ethnic cleansing.
No, I
haven't. Like we're not gonna make America great again with other people's babies. That was kind of his line. I'm paraphrasing here, but the other people's babies stuff. And he don't give a shit. You can't even say that comment backfired on him because that's exactly what he wanted to say. He stands by it. And the difference between his voters and the next opponent was like 72,000 votes.
What?
So these people – and he's made – his name is Steve King in Iowa. These people These people, they knew that he made these kind of comments before they voted for him. This is what they wanted, bro. There mm-hmm. ain't no way you're getting this guy out, voting this guy out of office. It's kind of crazy. So I bring that up because I brought it up last week. You know, this kind of toxic environment is making its way into our schools.
Right.
Okay. And it's unfortunate, but I'm going to keep bringing these situations back about people that basically don't belong in schools.
They have no right.
You ain't got no business.
Yeah, you ain't not got no business being
in schools
because you got to protect students.
So the latest situation is...
Is this a case of whose man is this?
It's not. Okay, the Steve King quote should be whose man is this, but we know whose man this is. It's the people in Iowa that voted for him. That's whose man it is. So we're talking Louisiana high school. That's not what it's called. It's in Louisiana. It's a high school. I don't know the name of it yet. Young man's name is Jalen Sewell, and I hope that I pronounced that right. If I butchered it, my apologies, Jalen. So they suspended him and 20 of his classmates, all African American, for their hairdos, bro. Okay, I don't know if you've seen this hairdo when you go and you visit our schools, because mm-hmm. I know you visit a lot of them on a daily. Okay, African American, poofy curly hair up top, dyed blonde.
Yeah, man.
Why do kids want to wear that?
It is what it is, bro. I don't, you know.
No. It's Odell Beckham. They want. They like the Odell Beckham style, right? Gotcha. Wide receiver, New York Giants.
Gotcha.
Excellent receiver, stylish guy. That's how he wears his hair. It's almost kind of like a wide mohawk of curly hair, and then they dye the top blonde,
mm-hmm.
bro. They're suspending kids.
That's
black kids.
What was the justification?
That it was a disruption to the learning environment.
Get the fuck out of here with that.
Dude. That it's a disruption to the learning environment. I'm telling you that it's a cultural war to these people. Okay? Is it to me? Sure it is. Okay? It's a cultural war. Him and 20 of his friends, twisties, dreadlocks, braids, all suspended for that, Rodrigo.
So, bullshit.
So, I mean, I just highlight that because the toxic environment that's coming from 45 in the White House is going all the way down.
The normalization of it makes me nervous, man. Like I just hope, because I know it's becoming the new normal, right? Oh, it's okay, because then we become desensitized to it, and it's, oh, yeah, it's just how, I hope not. I hope motherfuckers are out there, like, getting upset about it, because we need to start getting more active and talking to people, man, and letting people know what their rights are. This is one of the things that we talked about for this next election about getting out to other states and doing some poll walking out there. Because it ain't right, man. They can't be doing this.
All right, we can switch it up now, man. I just wanted to get that
out
there.
Want
to get that one off your chest? Yeah. People that just don't belong in education. You got no business in a school.
Whose man is this?
You got no business justifying that kind of stuff, man. Like, yeah. Anyway, so where are we going next here, man? We got to wrap it up here in about, you got about 10 minutes or so, whatever you want to talk about. We wanted to get to, there might be some changes going on in your district. There might be some going on in mine. And I'm talking about changes in leadership and the kind of angst that filters down to teachers and to staff, right? There's nothing crazier than getting a new principal. There's nothing that produces that kind of an angst like getting a new boss.
It's just an anxiety. I think the anxiety is always, how's this person going to be? Are they going to like me? Are they going to change up everything? But see, typically it's like with veteran teachers, it's about, I've been doing my own thing. This is what I hear, right? And it's like veteran teachers going, I've been doing my own thing. I just kind of want to stay in my lane, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to ruffle any feathers. Sometimes feathers need to get ruffled though, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm going to frame it a different way. So sometimes you get a principal that actually trusts the work that you do, okay? And in this case, let's just say it was me. My principal does trust the work that I do, and most of our staff, he trusts the work that we do. And when people actually cared about testing, and I may have cared about testing at one time, I don't anymore, we actually hit our marks.
Right.
And we weren't doing anything fancy. He was just, you know, trusting us.
Right.
You know, they were observing us. They were highlighting good tactics, good skills, and stuff like that. But nothing special.
Right.
We hit the marks, bro.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But then when you get somebody new that comes in, you don't know if they're going to trust you as a teacher. You may hear that the person coming in is a micromanager, mm-hmm. or they may hide behind their assistant principals and force them to become micromanagers.
Someone has to be the bad guy.
You never know.
Good cop, bad cop.
So that produces an angst.
Right.
I don't know.
I think, again, like one of these things that we, there was a great article that was published this weekend in the New York Times about, what was it? I have it pulled up, about principals in Chicago and how they're trying to put meaningful and talented principals at different schools, right? At every school, mm-hmm. right? And the article went on to talk about, you know, we do a lot, you hear a lot about teacher accountability, about holding teachers to a different standard. And what comes, you know, what's left out in that equation is the principal. And I think a principal is a huge piece to the well-being of a teacher. And I think the number one thing that you just talked about was trust. Letting your strong teachers do what they do and support them however you need, and supporting the teachers that maybe might need some help, you know, and what that looks like. I always get stressed out about, not stressed out, it's a bad thing to say. I always get, I'm conscious of teachers or principals who aren't putting their teachers in a position to succeed, right? And so if that doesn't mean giving an awesome teacher 50 kids because they can handle it, you know what I mean? That's not indicative of an awesome leader. That's not giving a strong teacher 9 different preps and traveling, you know, from class to class, right? That's, it's trying to make it so that the anxiety level for each teacher is as little as possible. I remember hearing our CEO at High Tech High, Larry Rosenstock, say one thing that was so, it left a mark on me, and that was, everybody's job in this organization is to support the teacher. So whether it's facilities, whether it's the CFO, whether it's whoever, the director, anybody, our job is to support the teacher, because that's where the magic happens, that relationship between the teacher and the students. And so if we can get to a place there with all of our principals, I mean, yes, they're going to be pain in the ass teachers, but I mean, for the lot of our 2,000 teachers, 2,000 something union members, most of them are amazing. And so, and most of them have.
It's the first time I've heard you say that, Rodrigo.
That's not true.
I'm going to tear up.
But you know, we're going to assume best intentions, right? It's not because, I mean, I don't think we do a good enough job of listening to our people. Some of our teachers who are struggling, they also have shit going on in their lives, and no one's heard about that story. And so, again, how do we support those guys to do amazing work? I think,
and that's all that the Educated Guest podcast is all about, man. It's all about figuring out where to go next in education, changing the look, changing the feel, changing the just, I mean, reinventing it, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've said it before. Educational system is not designed for today. It was designed for factory workers or something like that, right?
The industrial age.
The industrial age, my man. Okay. So we're going to wrap this up, man. We're going to head on out. I felt like we had a great podcast today.
It was good. It was good. It's a get my wheels back in there. I hope I wasn't boring. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm gonna take it out on some good,
all right,
hydro, some Grover Washington.
All right. So I just want to remind you guys that my good friend David, he does the BMS walk in April, and I tweeted out. It's on also on my Instagram by the same name, CZAREFF. You can see the t-shirts for pre-order that he is selling to raise money. Again, that's for multiple sclerosis, right? I also did another interview today that'll come out in a couple of weeks. It's with a principal by the name of Norma Sandoval. She is a very powerful educator, and I was very honored to interview her today. So that kind of pumped me up for today, bruh. All right, and I
go two for one, bro. Two for one.
I got busy today, bro. On my time off, I am going back into the classroom tomorrow.
Nice.
I'm gonna finish out the 4 days of this week, and then we will go into our spring break.
There you go. All right, man. Finish strong.
So, anything you want to shout out on the way out here, my man?
Not much, man. Just appreciate you coming over to the Oso Manor to record. Hopefully, we can do this 2 Mondays out of the month. And crank out a regular schedule, man.
That'll do it, man. All right. We are the Educated Guest Podcast. I'm your host, Zara F., a.k.a. Caesar Does It. And that's my man, Rodrigo, over there, a.k.a. PMD. You can find him at Mr._AYYY. All right. Hit us up on the Twitters, and thank you. Thank you for being listeners.
Peace.